Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. Pennsylvania, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hello. Yes, welcome into another edition of the World Boxing Review. Yeah, some good fights happening tonight. Yeah, we got a couple things to talk about, and yeah, ready to go.
Well, take us on that trip around the world. You know, we got a lot of stuff happening in boxing now. Everything's picking back up, cancellations, corona, and this and that. People coming down with the virus. The virus is picking up all over the United States. And things like that. So we get a chance to fit a lot of that kind of stuff in. So come on with it, Bob.
Yeah, just want to take a moment to just let the boxing community out there know I had a personal loss this week. My girlfriend for many years since 1982, her brother passed away from COVID-19, man. So it's real, it's happening, and it hit home this week, too. So, you know, we know the protocols, we know all that, we've been talking about it, but I just want to give it up to Stan Deritzig, man. May he rest in peace.
Yeah, we send our prayers and blessings out to the family. But this coronavirus is real, and how do we know it's real? The Pottsville football team, they're quarantined now. A player came down with the COVID-19, and my nephew, J.C. Carabella Snowell, and the rest of the team and the coaches, they're in quarantine for 14 days. So, man, this thing is really, really for real, Bob.
Right, and let me also mention, yesterday Blue Mountain had three students come down with it. They're closed up. Also, Tri-Valley High School, North Schuylkill High School. So it's in the high schools around here, too. So, yeah, you know, it's real, and the schools are going back to virtual learning until at least after the Thanksgiving break. But anyway, yeah, let's get on that magic carpet ride and then talk about a couple big things happening around the world. And we'll start at the bubble at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, where Terrence Crawford, undefeated, 36-0, 27 of those wins by knockout, defends his WBO World Welterweight Championship for the fifth time, facing off against challenger Kell Brook, 39-2, 27 KOs. In the co-main event, we'll have Joshua Franco, 17-1-2, 8 knockouts, defending his WBA World Super Flyweight crown in a rematch with Andrew Maloney, 21-1, 14 KOs. That loss, he got beat by Franco back in June 23rd, a 12-round unanimous decision. So a big rematch tonight, too. Also on this ESPN telecast will be Tyler Howard, 18-0, versus Keandre Leatherwood, 22-7-1. That's a middleweight bout. And the other eight-rounder, we'll see Joshua Greer Jr., 22-2-1, step in with Edwin Rodriguez, 11-5-1, in a bantamweight class. Elsewhere in the States, at the Staples Center in L.A. on Fox Sports 1, the co-headliners are the Amilcar Vidal, 11-0, 10 KOs, versus Edward Jeremy Ortiz, 11-0-2. That's a middleweight battle. And the heavyweight fight between Efetibar Apache, 9-0, all 9 wins by KOs, and Joe Jones, 11-2, 8 knockouts. And that light heavyweight contest between Vicente Miranda and Patrick Pierre ends the night in Orlando, Florida, and super middleweights Adama Osumanu, 27-4, and Antonio Urista battle at the top of the card in Covington, Kentucky. Albertville, Alabama, tops their slate with the Eric Draper versus Coy Lambert middleweight mashup, while in Derry, New Hampshire, Tim Rolfe, 4-1-1, and Mike Marshall, 3-1, slug it out for the USA New England heavyweight strap. And Michael Hand Jr., 10-1, and Ryan DiBartolomeo, 3-0-1, 5 for the vacant USA New England welterweight belt. Here we go, three big female world title fights headlining at the Wembley SSE Arena in London, UK, on DAZN and Sky TV, led by Katie Taylor, 16-0, putting her 4 belts on the line. That's the WBC, WBA, IBF, and WBO World Female Lightweight Crowns when she takes on unbeaten Miriam Gutierrez, 13-0. And if Taylor comes out of that, I'd like to see Taylor go back at it in a rematch with Jessica McCaskill. That should be good. Also, Terry Harper, 10-0-1, defends her WBC and IBO World Female Super Featherweight Crowns against the undefeated 13-0 Katharina Penders. And Rachel Hall, 6-0, and Joelina Guadagnini, she's 9-1-2, both seek the open WBA World Female Bantamweight title. And it was a full 10-rounder, LC middleweights John Doherty, 9-0, and Jack Cullen, 18-2-1, do battle. Germany, which we know was in a lockdown, but I've been trying to keep up with what's happening there. They did have some fights last week, so we're going to say they have an event scheduled in Hamburg tonight. Christian Thum, he's 5-0, versus Mirko Tintor, 15-4-1, vie for the vacant IBO Continental Heavyweight Crown. Krasnodar, Russia, features the Sergei Sakakian versus Kantemir Kalazikov welterweight contest. While in Wonsan, South Korea, it's Sungmin Lee, 7-1, versus Hyun Tae Bae for the country's heavyweight crown, and Moo Hyun Kim and Dong Hyun Won fight for the country's open lightweight belt. Toowoomba in Queensland, Australia, tops their night with the Steve Spark versus Chad Collins super lightweight clash. Two venues in New Zealand, heavyweight Luis DeFace de Forges debuts in New Plymouth, and Ariane Nicholson versus Uetsa Opetaye in a battle of debuting female middleweights in Tauranga. And in Nadi, Fiji, out there in the island of Fiji, they host the fight for the vacant WBF Asia Pacific super welterweight title between Ronald Naidu, 10-4-3, and Jesse Walvoudi, 10-4-1. There we go. Eight countries, as we said, Europe pretty much shut down still. And, you know, it's part of the world we live in. But great fight tonight, especially Terrence Crawford on TV and ESPN, and also the big female title fights over there in London.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Bob. A lot of fights like this, big fights. You know, Terrence Crawford, you know, he's something special. You know, one of the pound-for-pound fighters in that list, on the top of the list. And with him and Brock should be a dynamite fight, you know. Bob Arum is saying if Terrence Crawford loses, that Brock will probably, they'll try to make the match with Manny Pacquiao. But my thing is, you know, Terrence Crawford, you know, he deserves big matches at this time and big money. And to put all that in proper perspective, you know, with a win tonight, you know, will be dynamite, and hopefully that he can pursue the thing with Manny Pacquiao, which is a big name, a big pay-per-view fight. Why not, if Crawford wins, create those opportunities for Crawford? I know there's things, his contract is coming up and up for renewal to Crawford, rightfully so. Just like, you know, Canelo Alvarez, you know, he's fighting for the better fights and better money that's out there. And, you know, he got his contract back from De La Hoya because they didn't put the matches together that he feels that he righteously deserves. He wants to stay busy, stay on the scene, and stay on the screen. Fight. That's what fighters do, and that's what these guys are looking to do. And I know it takes a little bit of planning, Bob, for the big ones, but you got to create those opportunities. And doing that, not only does it better the sport, but it betters the fighter and where they can, you know, you only got one shot, Bob, and that margin of time that the Lord gives you, you know, you got to make the most of it, the best of it, while you have it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, and there was some talk this week, Eddie Hearn talking back with Canelo. He's a free agent, so we know he broke with De La Hoya, but the Callum Smith fight, he's looking to put that on. Well, you know, a couple months ago, Eddie Hearn didn't want to put the Callum Smith fight on, so he's kind of changing his mind there. But because Al Haymon and the PBC want Canelo to fight Caleb Plant, they're all looking for something to put together for the 19th of December. And just another note, too, about that was scheduled for the 5th of December, the Ryan Garcia-Luke Campbell fight. turns out Luke Campbell came down with a positive test this week too, so that might be pushed back to maybe the 19th. And again, we'll see what happens with that. But that fight is postponed right now from the 5th, the Garcia Campbell fight.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. You know, it's those things are just constant change. You know, it's just this environment of the pandemic. You know, without crowds and things, some places can have a little small crowd, some places can't. You know, some people are in the bubble, some people, you know, it's just very confusing, not only for the boxing camps, but, you know, for the general public that's watching and viewing of boxing. And with this,
right,
Crawford fight is a great matchup with him and Brock. You know, like always, Terrence Crawford's something special, and he has to be ready. And you know, the crowd factor. You know, some guys, to be a star, the crowd and all that, that's what makes their persona. That's what makes them perform. Some guys can't, you know, in these certain things inside the bubble, is just like it's a glorified sparring match. And some guys can't perform that way.
Right, they need that excitement of the crowd behind them. Yeah. Also, I just wanted to mention, as we're moving on here, about the fights that have been canceled. Three fights last night in London were canceled because of the COVID-19. I mean, they pulled the show off, but three of the seven fights were actually changed at the last minute, too. So it's still happening. But also, I just want to take a moment, too, to pass along some numbers from last Saturday night. It was actually not a bad night there for Fox TV. Luis Ortiz, he was the headliner, taking on Alexander Flores, big heavyweight matchup. You know, Ortiz only losing twice, both times Wilder. Well, it had a peak of 1,312,000, which isn't bad for a 45-second fight, you know, I mean, before you even got to tune in. So that number could have been higher, you know, if the fight would have went a little longer. But that's not a bad number, 1.3 million for a 45-second fight.
Yeah, you know, I guess the word got around and people start tuning in. Well, you know, they were tuning in to watch it. And that number, you know, that's a dynamite number for at this time. You know, we've been getting low viewing ratings, and it looks like this here heavyweight champion, you know, guys who fought for the heavyweight champions like Ortiz, you know, people tuned in to watch it.
Yeah, we were talking about last week a lot of those new heavyweight names that we threw out there, like Hrgović and the big Chinaman Zhang. But here's Ortiz, you know, said two losses, both to Wilder, but nobody else has been able to do much against him. So, you know, he's back in the mix too, I think, especially with a big 45-second knockout of Flores.
Yeah, well, with the ratings and all of that.
Nice ratings indeed.
Yeah, with a big knockout like that and stuff. He should go at least in the top five because he's been there and done that. They have a 45-second knockout, national TV with a good heavyweight. He should at least go in the top five. But, you know, with this new weight class that the WBC is developing, somewhere when that ratings comes out in December, he's probably going to be in that, you know.
Yeah, the Bridgerweight, they're calling it. Yeah, officially they're naming it the Bridgerweight. So it's a 200-224-pound class, yeah.
Yeah, the Bruiserweight is it comes from the young man that got mauled by an animal who saved his sister and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was a heartfelt sentiment. The president, Mauricio Sulaiman, felt that being in the pandemic, something like this, and it touched everybody's heart. You know, and this young man is a fighter, and he is fighting. This young man, you know, his face and stuff is all messed up. And in class and style, this is what the WBC does. They felt this young man's pain, and the opportunity had come up where they were working on creating that weight class. And bang, they named it after a young man, and that's a blessing for a young man. They keep him motivated and things. To grow in life, it ain't how you start. It's about how you finish, and there's different struggles along the way that we all run into. That it keeps you going. It keeps you encouraged when things like this happen. to you. So it's
right.
something good, and I think that's something good for boxing. That weight class from 200 to 224, and it gives guys another opportunity. You know, them great big heavyweights like Anthony Joshua. You know, they're weighing 240, 260, and even Tyson Fury at 270.
At 270. Yeah.
Yeah, man, they're big dudes, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
sounds like basketball players, right?
And now we're talking again about Hrkovic and also Zhang. Those guys are all over 6 foot, and 6'6" again, and you know, well over 250 pounds too. So the big heavyweights are getting bigger. So yeah, guys like Usyk and some of those other guys, Brightest, and these other guys that are fighting around like, you know, 219 and 215 and 222. You know, they got themselves a little battle to go against people more their, you know, their size and weight. Rather than giving up 40 pounds or so,
You're right, Bob. You know, it's just amazing how the human being has grown, man. And there's a lot of guys around that size now. Before you look at that in sports, you know, they would that as a freak of nature. And then you have Nikolai Value. He was 7 foot and some. You know.
Right.
Yeah, I had Larry Donald went up against him. I thought Larry won the fight, and so did the people sitting there against Nikolai Value at 7'2". But, hey, it went to the scorecards. We didn't get the nod, but I thought he won, you know. And so did the spectators. They doused the ring. They threw stuff at Nikolai Value, but that was then and this is now, Bob, and there's a lot of great heavyweight championship fights going on, and to talk about that, talk about the Tyson Fury and the Wilder, back and forth. These guys are going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. They want to fight or they don't want to fight on Wilder. So, I know we have a guest hanging in the queue, and we got a surprise guest today, Bob. So let's try to hold on, Hector, and we'll bring you right in a minute. Bob, with these big guys, with Wilder and them, Wilder has to stop making excuses. And if he stops making excuses and moves on, either he's going to fight or he ain't going to fight.
Right now the lawyers are getting billable hours, like we talk about all the time. That's where it's at. It's mediation now. You know, trying to settle something up. But, you know, again, we talked about the contract, and the contract's done. And, as far as Tyson Fury is concerned, he's moving on to fight somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's bring in our surprise guest, and we have Henry Hascopper. Welcome into the world, boxing with you, Hector.
It's macho time. It's still macho time. It's an honor to be on.
Baby. I'm getting feedback. I know you're listening to the show. We're getting feedback on the mic. Just move away from that a little bit so we can hear you clearly. All right, what's going on, champ?
Everything good, brother. Everything good, man. It's good to be, you know, another day, thankful, and still pushing.
Well, that's good, man.
There's a big fight tonight.
With Crawford and Brock.
Crawford and
you know, 147. You know, you've been down in that weight class. What do you think about that? Then tell us what you got going on.
You know, that's an interesting fight. Logic tells us that Crawford just walk in and get the win. Logic, no? But this is boxing, as you know. A lot of things happen in boxing. I like, you know, these kind of questions as a fighter looking on, and me being a fighter, I look on. I look for certain things. I don't look about who wins and who what. I look at who fights who style. And something I'm interested to see is, will Kell Brook's speed be a factor? Would he land something because of his speed, when he lands it on a Crawford, it will probably be tested. That's what I'm looking for. But, you know, it's an interesting fight. The way I see it, you know, Crawford ends up winning, but I think he might be tested today.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, you know, I always try and talk about the crowd factor during this pandemic time. You know, there's without a crowd, some guys can fight in the gym.
But, you know, for us fighters, I don't care. I'll fight you anywhere. With two people in the ring, in a gym fight, in a public fight, doesn't matter as a fighter. But you know who wins here? The public. Our fan base is growing a little bit more because they don't have nothing to do. They stay at home, so they have to watch boxing. And being honest, not so long ago, I was saying boxing's in a hole. Boxing's down to the shit. But as I've been seeing these matchups lately, there have been some good matchups happening lately. So I feel like boxing is going to put it back. See, young boys out there fighting. They put it on the show.
Absolutely.
Especially, and shout out to Top Rank. Because those are the few promoters that keep things moving through a pandemic, through the good times. The big promoters stay on top, like Top Rank. They keep giving the shows. Thanks to them. Thanks to our head, PBC. I mean, boxing is a good place right now.
Okay. Well, what do you got going on, Hector? It's my understanding you got some things going on with some promotions and stuff that you're doing.
Well, you know, God is great. I would say God is great. Once you're a fighter, you're always a fighter. So I'm always fighting in life. We fight every day as regular people. We fight in life. Life is a fight, so I'm always pushing. I'm always in the mix. Ready to go into the ring when I'm the building, I'm ready. I'm working with now with Eruption Boxing Management, Gwen Leggy, and I'm telling you, I have a female management team working with us, and having a female is needed sometimes. You know, you married man, so you have a wife to be a pain in the butt. So this Gwen is similar. She's a shark. She's on top of everything. So things are moving now. Outside the ring, we got a couple of things going on. The Macho Time Project coming out soon, the film. We have a documentary on Showtime that's coming out December 4th. We're looking forward to it. Eric Draft, director, producer, put that out. We have the Macho Time book is out already. You know, we stay active. Plus, I got my documentary coming out, Growing Up Camacho, my life story. So, you know, I'm trying to stay busy. I'm trying to learn how to box through this pandemic, you know, in the day-to-day.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about the book.
The book is great, man. The book was written by Christian Gildice. Christian wrote The Hands of Stone, along with Fellow Gomez, the Guerrillos. I mean, he wrote a great share of boxing books, and the latest one was Macho Time, The Life Story of Macho Camacho. And what I liked about this book is that Christian focused on, he left everything in boxing terms. He didn't really go off the topic of boxing. He didn't bring about his life outside the ring, and I appreciate that. But it's a great book. Gotta get it. Still Macho Time.
Macho Time, man. We got to look to it so we can get it.
It's
just talk about your younger life around your father when he was on the top of the world, top of the game, and your experiences around that and how you developed into a champion.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Spanish Home, New York City. We come from a rough place. My father came to United States, New York, from Puerto Rico at a young age. He came here not speaking English, the American dream. He came here speaking Spanish. He was raised out of Spanish Harlem, the rough neighborhoods, but you had the Italians, you had the Greeks on First Avenue, you had the Blacks, you know, and so on and so on. So it was segregated, you know, we were separate. He came out through those times. He made it out the street through gangs, and he made it to the White House, the American dream. That's inspiration. So I've seen that. I apply that to my life. Anything and everything is possible. For me, he broke off first.
Yeah, your father, when it's just like you, it was flash, and when you talk about greatness, there was something great about him, the way he walked, the way he talked. It was boxing all the time, and it was Macho Time all the time. And, you know, people forget when your father was blazing flash, how he, man,
You was around much. My father loved you. He respected you. You knew he had. It was something about him, that aura. Something about him. He was born with it. It was natural. Well, you know what's been the best love in boxing now? You see all these fighters that fight on TV wearing Macho Time boxing outfits. They trunks. They're going to ring with skirts. And they probably don't know where to get it from. The man who started that up is Hector Macho Camacho, who started that up. All these flamboyant outfits, these Mayweathers, they all got that gig from Macho Camacho, which he's the Puerto Rican Muhammad Ali. That's what he did.
Yes, he was.
Special.
He'll come in sometimes dressed as an Indian chief, sometimes a fireman, sometimes a policeman. It did not work. The way he was feeling in training camp, he would design that outfit.
And he didn't play. Something about inside training. When he trained, he trained. When he played, he played.
Oh, ain't no question about
when
that.
When he trained, he trained. And you know the man. He was a special
right.
man. He was gifted. And it's my job as a son to hold that legacy. Those are big shoes to fill. He was a bad man inside a ring. Now, the apple to fall from the tree. I'm there. But my goal outside the ring, as a man, as a person, is to take that legacy to the next level. That's what I've been doing. I've been constantly busy with charity work, foundation, giving back to the kids, giving back to the youth. As a Muslim, that's our job.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, Hector Junior. All the rights to you as a fighter, a good, great fighter, and to be out here doing that stuff for kids in the community is an added plus to your family. That's the way your family was. They would invite people in and feed them when they were in training camps in the hotels. Come on, your mother, your grandmother be cooking, Hector's mother. Come on in, get some food, everybody eat. They didn't care who it was. Come on, eat.
That's how we are. That's who we are. We've been through the struggle. We come from the bottom. That's who we are.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that, man.
Yeah.
Talk to my grandmother. Maria Camacho, man, she was the one that kept my father straight. Because you know my father was a wild man outside the ring. The same flamboyant, the same outfit you see inside the ring, he's the rock that outside the ring. And you just had flamboyant outside the ring as well. And just as explosive.
Yeah.
Macho time.
What's in line? For your promotions and all of that next up for you.
Well, we're working with like I said, with Legacy. She's working hard for me. She's working a fight out for a good fight for me. Like, I'm 42 years old. I'm 41. But I'm still fresh. You've been around me. I haven't been beat up. I'm a good shot with a fighter. And then it came the second half
that's
of my
right.
career. I got lazy. I didn't need boxing. And I still don't need boxing.
Okay.
So when I come back, it'll be for something significant. A significant fight. It can't be for finance.
Okay, let's bring Bob Murray, our radio aficionado, and Henry Hascop. Welcome into the World Boxing Review. We'll bring Henry Hascop in. We got Hector Camacho Jr. on.
Hey, what's up, fellas? It's Macho time.
Hey, how you doing? I met you at the Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame. When we inducted your father,
okay.
I was actually the MC that day.
Okay, I got you, bro.
Kept on saying, what time is it?
What time is it?
What time is it? And the crowd went wild.
Yeah,
go
ahead, Bob.
Book coming
what are you saying, Bob? No, I was just saying, letting Henry get on there and say hello. Hi, Henry. Good to have you back on.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
We have to come out to Junior, man. Yeah, I got to meet you down there in Atlantic City, too, for the Hall of Fame as well. So, pleasure to have you on the show. Nice to hear your story, man.
It's great to hear from you guys. We're all boxing family. We all bleed the same blood. So, of course, it's great to be on some boxing.
Okay. Any question, Kenny or Bob, for Hector?
No, I just want to know when his book is going to come out. He said he's writing a book.
Yeah, the book's been. I have a kids' book called Macho Dad. I did for kids. It's easy. You can find it on Amazon. It's called Macho Dad.
Oh, okay.
It was teaching the kids how to deal with the loss. Because during that time, my pops passed away. And I had two beautiful daughters that was growing up. And I didn't know how to explain to them that their grandfather's gone. What's the loss? So it was up, you know, for me, it was therapeutic to write a book, Point Blank, and I hooked up with Kristen. I hooked up with Dustin Warburton, who's done several books, Dennis Rodman, Costa Sue, and a bunch of other athletes. And at a good time, we hooked up, and we did a children's book called Macho Dad, Teaches How to Deal with the Loss. Like, people go through losses every day, their favorite animal, a bird, their dog. And how do they explain to the kids how, you know, they gone, they lost. So that's what that book inspired to do, and that was out. What recently came out, it's called Macho Time. That was a book by Hannibal Publishing, Kristen Gildice, so the same writer who wrote, the same author who put Hands of Stone or Bill of the Rams book out recently. Then later on became a movie. Same writer, same publishing company. So they put out Macho Time. It's basically the life of Hector Macho from the upbringing, where he came from, the streets, what was accomplished inside the ring, and who he was as a person. It was all through family and friends. He was close to my father. So, it was a good book.
Well, growing up as the son of a legend, how was it, like, with the kids and everything? Did people actually try to pick on you or anything? Or, you know, what was the story there?
So you say that, you know, it had a quote that was cards, you know, of course, the name Camacho, so everybody knew me, you know. I used to walk around the streets when I was young, I had to, you know, random people point at me, oh, that's Camacho's son, oh, that's little Macho. So I had that attention, that was the great, you know, the good thing about it, that wherever I went, people more or less knew who I was, oh, your father Macho. The bad thing about it was I used to get bullied. People
yeah, that's
want to
get
out of the table, and I go up the streets in New York. I had to prove myself. I couldn't be no punk. So, you know, it had a good thing as bad when it came down to that with friends. And the other side, Macho Camacho, I was going through the big fights as a young kid. The Las Vegas fights, the Buffalo fights. I was like, wow. And coming out from where I come from, the pissy hallways and this project booth in New York City, to going to the big life, to the fancy life, being around my father's attention, going back to what we're going to. So growing up during those times, it was fun and it had its resentments, you know? Like, wow, why I'm living here, why I'm raised here, that type of situation. Because, you know, that's what I have a documentary coming out soon. It's called Growing Up Camacho, the life story of Hector Camacho Jr., explaining to everybody my life story, what I accomplished, what I went through, my downs, what I had to get through, you know? We working, baby.
Yeah.
We working. Watch our time.
And to speak, you know, there's the happy times, but the passing of your father and what happened to him was also sad. Hector Jr., explain a little bit about that feelings and stuff when all that went down, the shocker and all that. Talk a little bit about that.
You know, I'm still numb to it, but I'm still sensitive, you know. It's tough, you know, but at the same token, as a believer in God, it was just time to go. I mean, you know, he came up the fast life, he went the fast life. I feel like he was stripped from us. He left early, but in a way, me being who I am, as far as my faith, you know, I understood, you know, okay, bro, I understood, you know, so. I live with it. It's hard not to forget about it. Every day, you know, like I wake up in the morning, normal people, random people, hey, come on, I'm talking to your father. I get the everyday thing with me, so I learn how to deal with it, I learn how to go with it. Just, you know, that's part of life.
Yeah.
What I'm proud of most is what he left behind. It's what he had done, what he accomplished.
He really,
I was young, I didn't understand that. He was never home. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't an everyday father. You know, he wasn't my mother, so he wasn't around me 24/7. He wasn't over here, dad, check my homework. No, he wasn't there for me. I would see him on TV like a super dad, like a superhero. Whenever he's around, come around, see me, the fancy cars and et cetera, et cetera. You know, those are the great memories I hold on to these times and things he left behind. And those are goals that I set for myself, standards that I set for myself that I have to accomplish. And, you know, remember, boxing is a poor man's sport. My father didn't go to school. We don't go to school as fighters. That's when we get beat up. I love the sport that I love. It's also horrible, man. I look at boxing. I understand boxing. Boxing is in a beautiful place as far as boxing and talent. But the business side of boxing is F up. And these boxing families, we don't have retirement funds. We don't have a 401k plan. We don't have shit. 90% of us fighters retire broke. You know what it is to dedicate your life 20 years, 50 years, They get punched in your head for fucking living. To be the square for somebody else. Hey, buddy, you don't know any better. You talk from bad surroundings. And you get screwed. It's messed up. The boxing got to change. It's sad, but long story short, we work with Marshall Tomlin. And let's see my father left behind if he really grab it and move it. So that's what we said.
Did your father help train you? Train you?
Never. Everything I watch, everything I seen, is what I learned. Is it my DNA? He didn't have to. It's my DNA. I picked up a fast learner. He always said you're sharp. Sharp. He's always telling me that. He called me Bobby Poppy. He's sharp. I watch everything.
Yeah.
I hanged out with him when I was young. I was living the party life at 12 years old. I got good walking around the damn room naked. I was macho man. I was a macho boy. He was macho man. I was macho boy.
Yeah,
well, you grew up.
That's right. I grew up fast. His love for me is not a typical father. His love for me was teaching me certain things. You know, things that you should look back. Honey, your father's crazy. Yeah, but I learned a lot. I came out a decent person.
And one thing about your father is that I can remember if he liked you, he'd give you the shirt off his back.
Real brother.
And stay here.
He's a real brother. He's off his side. If you get to know who he was, he's a real humble brother. And listen, this is the macho man. I experienced him stop the car and argue with a homeless dude outside for about 10, 15 minutes. When I first found him, he told the guy, "You again? I gave you money yesterday. What you do with your money?" And my father, his voice is raising. He's like, "You all right? It's a fucking homeless guy to see." He got out the car. He parked the car and got out. And he started talking to the guy. They were going back and forth arguing. My father gave him money. What you do with your... Yo, it was crazy. Then got back in the car and did more. And while I'm looking at him, so, you know, but just, that's who he is. I mean, that's who he is. Good heart. Good
hey,
heart.
What
good
do you think when he bring a Ferrari into the neighborhood?
Yeah. I've always crash one car and go back to the dealer, get the other one. And those are things I don't understand. You know, 22, 24 years old, making a lot of money, but love everywhere, you know? He lived that life. At the same time, I guess that's why we all humble. Because we seen that from young. Macho Man was a humble dude. He was humble.
Yeah.
Do you
plan on boxing anymore?
I fight every day in life. I got a wife that's on my ass every day.
I mean professionally in the ring.
I'm working hard. I'm working with the Green Legend, my new management team, Eruption Boxing Management. They set up a big fight for me right now. As I said, I wouldn't want to come back in the ring for change. I would come back something significant. I'm 40. But I'm still young. I'm not wearing tea. I'm young. I'm fresh. So, yes, we're looking at a fight for late February. But everything on the hold is COVID, so it's hard to say. We're looking at Ramon Alvarez, Canelo Alvarez's brother. We're going to make the fight happen somewhere in Texas, somewhere in California. We're waiting to see how things go. Everything on hold right now because of the COVID situation.
Okay.
Okay.
So, the fight
look,
this is
great,
Hector.
So,
and
I do my run every day.
Yeah, in closing, Hector, what do you want to get out there, you know, about the promotions? Who can they contact or whatever? Talk for it.
Well, you can contact, you can always, you know, you want to see me, you can find me. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Facebook all the time. You can find me on Facebook all the time. I'm also on IG. I do more Facebook. But when it comes down to business, you can always reach out to Gwen Levy. That's Eruption Boxing Management. They're doing my boxing thing. They're working on personal tests, people you reach.
Okay. Hector Camacho Jr. Hey, look, thanks for coming on the World Boxing Review Radio Show, Hector. And we'll be talking. We'll get you back on in your team. That woman team that you have, a promoter, manager, all that. We'll get them on one day, all right?
Yes, man. That's a boss lady, man. You're going to hear her story. So. I appreciate you guys doing all the
right.
Team as much as time. I look forward to seeing you guys soon. We get together at a boxing event soon. Atlantic City next year. Who knows?
All right.
All righty.
Thank you, Hector Camacho Jr. What time is it? Macho time. What
macho
time is it?
Time.
Macho time.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. Bob. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello.
There was heavy feedback.
Yeah.
Well, I think Henry got cut off here. Henry, if you can call back into the show, we'll appreciate it. But go on, Bob, as we're trying to get Henry back online.
Yeah, that was good actually hearing from him. Yeah, unfortunately, like you were saying, I think we were getting some feedback because he was next to the computer probably listening to the show. That was a pretty long delay there, so I think that we kind of messed things up. But anyway, we still got some good word out of Hector Camacho Jr., man. It was excellent talking to him, and we know to look forward to these books that are coming out. He's very active in movies, and if anybody out there who hasn't caught up on any of that stuff should go back and look at some of those other books that he was talking about, especially that Hands of Stone, too. That's a great book, too, about Roberto Duran. So, you know, these books are out there. Just get out. Yeah, everybody's locked down, man. Time to read a book.
Absolutely. And Henry's back on the online. Thank you for coming back on the World Boxing Review, Henry.
Yeah, that was a nice interview with Hector. You know, it's a little distorted, though. You know, something had a back feed. But first of all, I want
to. He was listening to the show while he was being interviewed. I tried to get him to move away.
yeah. First of all, I want to extend my condolences to Bob and his girlfriend. You know, losing her brother and everything like this. This virus is real.
Yeah.
And you know, when it hits home, then you finally realize that it is real. I wish more people would. You know, pay attention to this, and you know they all want to have parties and everything like this. I understand all that, but you know, if you just tuck away for a little while, you know, things will be better. But you know, you got these people that just go out and no masks, and you know, they just congregate on parties and everything like this. Think it's not going to happen to them. It's going to happen to the guy down the street. Well, one day you're going to be the guy down the street.
And the numbers are just going through the roof. They're going through the roof, the numbers are. You know, our little Schuylkill County went up 400 cases in 1 week, man.
I heard.
72 cases in the last week. You know, it's just amazing that these numbers aren't even coming down. They're just spiking and going up. And that's it, too. But, you're looking at some of the numbers, and it's the 24 to 35-year-olds, 18 to 24s that are low, the younger demographics. And they might not be getting as sick, but they're spreading because of them. You know, they bring it home, and grandpa gets it, or, you know, grandma, or their aunts, uncles, or older people, you know, are really susceptible.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
you know, you know, even my my two of my grandkids, they had it, you know, and, you know, they're all right now, but they were young, you know, and, of course, my son, you know, him and his wife had a, you know, hibernate for about 2 weeks, you know, in the house. They couldn't go anywhere, and, you know, so he was over the other day. You know, we had precautions, of course. You know, he had to fix some things in the house, but, you know, that's what he does. He likes to do things for people. But, you know, it's, you know, when we lost so many people. You know, we've run, let's say, the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame, the New York State Boxing Hall of Fame, and also Ring 8. And with them three events, 10 people from them events that attended them events are no longer with us. I mean, that's extraordinary.
It's, you know, Henry, when you speak of that, because this is the time when the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame, your Hall of Fame, where you're president at, a lot of the guys that went, been going to the dinners, they missed that this year. And they said they missed the food, they missed the atmosphere, everybody, so many great people there. They just missed it, and it's sad. And at this time, at this moment, from years to come, we're gonna be remembering this time, you know, of the things that we missed that
we
felt. We
can make up T-shirts. I survived coronavirus. Whatever. Hopefully we can make them up and wear them, you know, because I don't want to be one of the statistics, you know. But,
we don't. And And what you're going to be talking about today, Henry, are rules and regulations, and there's rules that we must follow with this pandemic.
Yeah. Well,
when it all started, when we were on there talking about washing your hands, washing your face, and social distancing and things like that, wipe down tops and stuff, watch what you touch, be careful that with, if you cough, cover your mouth, go wash your hands, stuff like that. Napkins, you blow your nose or something, make sure you put it away properly and things like that. There's certain guidelines that we got to all follow to protect one another.
Well, even going down the steps, you hold on to this, you know, the railing, you know, in a school or in any place, even your house, you know, if you're on the second floor, you walk down and you hold on to the railing. I mean, you know, somebody else could have held on to that too, that carries it, and you can just pick it up just like that. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just, it's a different world.
Yeah,
but going back to the,
we can make,
you know,
it
the rules.
We can make it through. We just got to be vigilant at the task that they're asking us to do. If all of us are vigilant and carry our tasks out, we'll bring them statistics down. One thing about the American people, when they put their mind to something that we're going to do it, we do it. And we do it in grand style and grand fashion. And that's what this has to happen. It has to be a collaboration of we the people. When we the people are all on the same page, we'll get the job done. That's our creed. That's what we make up out of. And people are seeing that now, and people are trying to come together, small, large organizations, individuals. Everybody has to do their part so we can overcome this thing and bring this down to a bare minimum. I don't think it will ever go away, but we can bring it down to a bare minimum and help save lives. And we talked about the Spanish flu, how it affected boxing, and there's a lot of boxers, you know, them gyms and stuff that guys are training out of. Some states are closing them back down. But you got to clean. You got to stay vigilant when you're in the gym, wiping down and all of that. Because you look, Eddie Hearns has it, Barry Hearns, two premier promoters in boxing. And now over there in England, they're closing up. And a lot of fighters that fought on them shows are catching it. You know, so all of that is to be looked at and things. But, hey, look. We have to stay vigilant. So, Henry, the rules and regulations, let's give some people the history about rules and regulations, and maybe we can put it in our mind to start doing this about the pandemic, you know, to stay. And it's about saving lives, I think.
Yeah, well, the rules and regulations of boxing, when it first started, like the first bare-knuckle fight that was registered, happening on January 6th, 1681. That's over 300 and some years ago. And there were no rules, really. I mean, it was just like a free-for-all. I mean, there was everything went until around 1741, when a guy by the name of Jack Burlton, he was the champion at that time. He actually killed a guy in the ring, and he felt really bad about it. So he drew up some rules, which is called the Bratton Rules. And, he tried to regulate it just a little bit. And, that started, you know, because before this there was actually no rules. So he kind of put things together. And, you know, when the Bratton Rules came out, the fighters, you know, couldn't, let's say, if you were knocked down, you know, before this, you were able to hit the guy when they were down. Now, if you're knocked down or you take a knee, you were allowed 30 seconds to come up to scratch. And if you didn't come up to scratch in 30 seconds, you were ruled, you know, a loser. You know, the other guy's hand would be raised. And then about 100 years later, they had the London Prize Fighting Rules, which was, you know, the next step for this whole thing, and introduced measures that remain in boxing today, such as outlawing budding. Before that, budding was you know, in boxing, gouging, scratching, kicking, hitting a man while down, holding the ropes, using resin and stones and hard objects in the hands, and even biting. Biting was legal up until then. And then they, you know, they changed all that. Then as far as the 30-second rule, if you knocked me down, I have 30 seconds to come up. You know, after 30 seconds, the referee would count to eight. For some reason, eight instead of 10, but eight. And if you didn't toe the line at eight, you know, you would lose. And so that was them rules, and people were dying. There weren't that many fights. There, I believe there was only like 859 fights in the first 100 years of bare knuckle boxing, and but there was 15 deaths in that time, and the ratio was a little too high because you know, people, like I said, there was hardly any real rules. Then, of course, the Marcus of Queensberry rules came in. That's the rules we go by now. I mean, that was the you know, that came in about, since, let's see, 1867. And it was, you know, they made the ring, you know, 24-foot square. Of course, they went down to 20 most of the time. You know, 3-minute rounds with 1-minute rest. If either man falls, you got 10 seconds to get up. If you don't, you know, you would lose by a knockout. If you're helpless in the ropes and the toes are off the ground, you were considered down. There was other things, too, like the gloves. You know, they regulated the gloves, how, you know, the smaller fighters would wear smaller gloves, the bigger fighters wear bigger gloves. A man with one knee was considered down. All contests were governed, you know, by the Marcus of Queensberry rules. Then, of course, during that time, simple thing like a padded ring. I mean, before, let's see, a little over about 120 years ago, they didn't have a padded ring. You know, if you went down, it was just wood. Or ground, or hard surface, and a lot of the deaths at that time were considered, well, were from falls, not from the punch. You know, where you fall and you hit your head on the either concrete or wood, you know, planks or something like this, and you know, you would really, really get hurt, and that was one of the true, you know, bad things. About that. Then, of course, they implemented, let's say, the mouthpiece. The mouthpiece came to be in around, let's say, 1910, a little bit further, by Ted Kidd Lewis. He was one of the first ones to use it. Before that, people used to just put cotton in their mouth and try to bite on it, you know. Then they came out with the mandatory eight count. Mandatory eight count was used as early as the late 40s and 50s in different states. But the first heavyweight championship of the world that had a mandatory eight count was the Floyd Patterson-Ingemar Johansson fight on March 13, 1961. That was the third fight. That was the first time they had a mandatory eight count in a world heavyweight championship bout. And, of course, the first mandatory eight and three knockdown rule in a round in a championship bout was when Harold Johnson stopped Von Clay in 1961. Then you had before that you had the cup. Before 1930s, you know, nobody wore a protection cup. You know, if you hit low, you know, you were in trouble. That's how Max Smelling won the world championship of the world. You know, and, you know, Jack Sharkey kind of hit him low and Smelling went down. And, of course, you know, he was ruled, you know, it was a disqualification. So that was the thing.
Right.
You know, in 1962, there was, you know, in New York, it was the first time they had doctors permitted to enter the ring between rounds. Before that, you know, that wasn't it wasn't going on. I mean, that was, you know, then. And, of course, the four ropes, you know, they always say the four ropes and a fight, the first championship bout with four ropes was supposed to be Emil Griffith and Louis Rodriguez on June 8th, 1963. But actually, if they look at the films, you can see Jack Johnson and Tommy Burns, they also had four ropes. But the thing is, they didn't have four posts. You know, they have a post in each corner. They actually had eight. They had it right in the middle of each, like between each corner, they had another post in there. So, you know, that wasn't that good either because, you know, you hit your head on the post, you know, you'd be in trouble. But after 1963, they went to the four ropes, and that was really good, you know, to put that in there. And, of course, you know, stopping the action when a mouthpiece falls out. I mean, they did that in the amateurs for years, and I believe it was Larry Hazard from, the, you know, from my state of New Jersey that implemented that into the pros. Now most people, you know, if there's a lull in the action and you know, and you know, my mouthpiece went out and the referee would call time and replace the mouthpiece. Of course, if you know, you did it unintentionally, you know, you'd be warned and then get points taken out. But you know, that was that. And then that, of course, several years ago, Hazard also implemented the instant replay, which I think is great. Now they're doing it in other states. I know they started it in New Jersey. They actually started it in the martial arts fight in Atlantic City, and then they went to the pros, professional boxing, just a month or so later. And that's another good thing because, you know, when you're scoring a fight, sometimes you don't know if it's a low blow. You don't know if the cut is caused by a punch or a butt. You know, was it a knockdown? Was it a trip or something like this? So I think the instant replay, you know, is another great thing for boxing. And, you know, like I said, in the history of boxing, from the first, let's say from the early 1700s up to now, believe it or not, we had over 2,000 deaths in boxing. And, you know, we're trying to make it better and better, but it's you don't want to say it's the nature of the sport, to hit, but we have to make it safer. You know, the amateur boxing is all about safety.
Yeah,
the amateur boxing is all
about safety.
Yeah, the amateur boxing is all about safety.
And the fatalities of sports, you have to remember, is that boxing with fatality of sports is now, with regulations, it's not even in the top 10 when it comes to injuries and stuff like that.
No. Thing
that they went in with the physicals, examination, pre-fight stuff that goes on where they can detect a guy HIV or if he's attached retinas or something like that and where he can't perform because of physicals and stuff like that, they put them in the rigs. The pre-fight stuff helps a lot. The brain scans that were brought in. And so all of that stuff is safety measures. But we got 90 seconds, Henry, if you can close up and
Yeah, well, like I said, the amateur boxing is very safe. I mean, a lot of times you go to amateur fight and people yell, why they stop? You know, why is the referee stopping the action and looking, you know, with the standing eight count or something like this? But it's for the safety. The referee is actually looking at the fighter and make sure, you know, he's all right, you know, asking him a couple of questions in between the counts. And, you know, it's all about safety. And I think, you know, I think boxing has come a long way. I mean, from the primitive days of the 1700s and 1800s, I mean, things are really looking up. I mean, you know, Jimmy Carter, when he fought a guy by the name of Collins, they had 10 knockdowns, you know, in just that one fight, and that was a world championship fight. And, you know, and then there was another one who was battling Nelson. You know, he knocked his opponent down 42 times. in 17 rounds.
You got 10 seconds, Henry.
Well, that's about it. And again, my condolences to Bob and his family.
Thank you again.
Yeah. Well, we like to close in saying this. It's safety, 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 and rules and regulations. We all must follow them. Rules are put there to protect each and every one for the sport, such as contracts, all of that kind of stuff, money and things. All of those rules that are in there, it's all about safety to protect the fighter and the people around it that oversee it, govern it. But we'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And Bob Murray, who takes us on that magic carpet ride around the world. And we're feeling sorry right now for his family's losses. But our prayers and blessings go out to Bob. And our boxing historian, boy, he delivers another great message. Thank you, Henry, for a job well done on rules and regulations. Henry Hascop, our boxing historian. And we'd like to thank Hector Camacho Jr. for coming in, man. He called up and said, I want to be on the show. So that's what we have the show here for guys who want to get a message out. Let them do it, because it's all about the boxers and them anyway. But thank you for tuning in for the World Boxing Review radio show. Thank you.
Thank you.